Hello, my name is William Zeller. I'm going to talk about selector-based view composition. This is work I did with my advisor Ed Felton at Princeton University. So SVC is a technique that allows automatic progressive enhancement of web pages, and this is done by modifying the MVC, or Model View Controller, architecture. So to talk about Ajaxification, we first have to talk about Ajax, and other speakers have talked about Ajax. I'm sure you're all familiar with it, but over the last 5 or 10 years, it has allowed more and more interactivity. It's become expected, and this technique of only loading content in part of the page, not reloading the entire page, is great, but it only works if the browsers support JavaScript. So you might be saying, who cares about browsers without JavaScript? This isn't 1995, everyone has JavaScript. But there are a variety of reasons why this is important. The JavaScript might be disabled because of security reasons. You might have legal requirements to support these browsers if the person's using a screen reader. Very importantly, search engines work much better if they can index content without having to run their own JavaScript interpreter. And there are other small annoyances. For example, if you have a link that only has an on-click handler and you try to open that in a new window or a new tab, it won't work, and this can be jarring for users. So the way that this is recommended to be handled is by using what's called progressive enhancement. And this is where you create the entire site in a way that doesn't use JavaScript, and then you add JavaScript to the page to add interactivity. So this works great for everyone, but the problem is that it takes a lot of developer time because you have to duplicate a lot of the view update code in order to get this to work. You have to implement a feature that works without JavaScript, then you have to write custom JavaScript that will grab this content from the server and put it into the page in the right place. So if we look at a way the model view controller architecture can be done, it can be done in a variety of ways, but this is a simple example of how a request might travel through. So a request comes into the controller gathers some data from the models, it sends this to a view, which can be one view or many views, and this, the view outputs HTML, which the browser interprets. So the user then progressively enhances the page, which he does by adding JavaScript. On the server side, he needs to output both the HTML and the JSON or XML version of the page. Then the developer has to write JavaScript on the client side that will pull down this JSON and apply it to the current page in the appropriate way. So SVC is provided as a server-side API, and what the developer does is on the server side, he instructs the page on how different pieces of the view are going to be put together. And the method for composition is done using selectors, which should be familiar to developers. And this has a number of advantages. It prevents the developer from needing to duplicate a lot of the view update code. He does not need to write any JavaScript at all if what you're doing can be handled by our framework. This tool can work in a variety of frameworks and languages. We implemented it using PHP and the CodeIgniter framework. Since the paper has been accepted, I've written a version in Python using Django. And this allows you to use your current template language and JavaScript. The only thing you need to change is at the point of composition, the views would need to be broken up. But inside that point, you can continue to use your template language. And if you have this sort of turned on, you don't have to go back and update old pages. It will continue to work. You can sort of start with the new page and add interactivity in that way. So we chose selectors as the way to instruct how to compose different pieces of the page together. And we did this because they're becoming more and more widely used. They started out as a way for CSS to define where the parts of the page were that needed to be styled. They're sort of ubiquitous in jQuery and a lot of other JavaScript frameworks, and they're also being used as part of the HTML5 API with the query selector all recommendation. So SVC modifies MVC by having the developer define these composition instructions on the server. He then passes these to SVC. SVC decides. It says if it's an AJAX request, output some JSON. If it's an HTML, if it's a non-AJAX request, output the HTML. And then SVC on the client side both calls and makes these AJAX requests and interprets the responses and applies it to the current page. So to give a brief example of what this looks like, we start with the initial page, which is sort of the, you can think of it as sort of the canvas on top of which compositions occur. So this might be the output of a view or it might be a string. Here we assume example is this string, this p tag that has an ID of message. You then call a series of actions, and here the first argument to the actions, which is pound sign message, is a selector, and the second one is what to do. So the first action we call is text. It looks for an element that has the ID of message. It sets the text to that. The second one looks for any p element, and it adds the last highlight. So then SVC, if it sees a non-AJAX request, it will compose this on the server and output the full HTML that's been put together. If it's a non-AJAX request, it throws away initial, and it just outputs the list of actions. And this will be applied to the page on the client side. And so one issue with this is when it's an AJAX response, the initial page is thrown away. So there's an assumption that the actions that you take make sense in the context of the page, and that's something I'll talk about later. So if we have an AJAX request, this JSON is outputted. The client-side code applies this to the document. The client-side code is 1.7 kilobytes, and it uses the jQuery library. So any library could have been used, but we chose jQuery arbitrarily. If there's a non-AJAX request, it needs to output HTML. This is a little dicier because the server needs to know, it needs to be able to run these selectors and do DOM manipulation, which you typically think of as a client-side task. So in our prototype, we used WebCore, which is part of WebKit, which is used by Chrome and Safari. So we essentially had a headless browser on the server, and this was implemented as a C++ extension to PHP. So this allows the composition to happen on the server. But just because we can output things appropriately, if it's an AJAX request or a non-AJAX request, doesn't answer the question of how these requests get made in the first place. Because the developer has, all the developer has done has defined these compositions on the server, and then he's written his templates without JavaScript in mind. So he's just created links that point to his controllers. We assume we can reverse map from these URLs to controllers, and this is a functionality that Django and CodeIgniter both provide, because you need to say that, you know, slash foo will map to some controller with the function foo. So to progressively enhance, on the way out, we annotate any link or form that we want to progressively enhance, or more specifically, any linker form that we want to replace with an AJAX call to the server. We add the class SVC rewrite, and then on the client side, when the code loads, it looks for any class, any element that has this class, and it changes it to use AJAX request. So we need to make a decision about which elements to progressively enhance, and we don't try to do this automatically because there are a number of issues. For example, suppose you have a tabs page. You have three tabs. You have sort of a tab holder and a header. You only want tab 2, for example, to load using AJAX when you have the tab holder on the page. So you might think, why can't we define sort of a hierarchy of classes and then sort of figure out where we are? But the problem is that a lot of AJAX updates don't really fall into this hierarchical category. For example, you might have a message, sort of a flash message that you want to show up on the top of a lot of different pages. So it's not totally clear at which point it's appropriate to make an AJAX request versus a non-AJAX request. So we define an API that is given a name of two controllers that says map, or when you're on one page, make any request to the second page an AJAX request. This is not, I don't think this is as elegant as it could be. I think the Python prototype of this that I've been working on has a lot of promise because you can use decorators to sort of more cleanly say when something is an AJAX request. But so the things you can do with SVC are defined by the actions we provide. We implemented 9 actions which were modeled on what jQuery can do. These can be extended. The only requirement for extending an action is that the same thing can be performed in the client and the server. So if the user doesn't have JavaScript, the action will need to be performed on the server, and if it does, it will be performed on the client. So these could be written by a single developer and sort of passed along as SVC plugins. So for example, if you wanted to add a before action, which would insert in an element before another element, you would use PHP or whatever language you're using. You would manipulate the DOM in the right way to insert the element on the server side. Then on the client, you would write JavaScript to do the same manipulation. You would sort of package those things together, and then in any of your controllers, you could call before. So far we've only talked about DOM manipulation, but SVC allows any action to happen that can be done on the server and the client. So you could create, in this example, you could create a redirect action, and because this can be done on the server and the client, on the server you can output a header, on the client you can call window.location. You have this equivalence between the client and the server action. This can be very useful. For example, if you're using SVC to do form validation, currently this is a difficult problem because it has to be implemented on the client-side code and then replicated on the server, and you need to replicate this on the server for security reasons often. But so this sort of redirect action can let you output an error to the current page if there's a problem, or redirect it to the next page if there's no problem. So what kind of overhead does this add to pages? There are two types of requests. There are 9 AJAX requests, which are all full page loads. So this would be the initial page load and then additional loads that load an entire page. This is the more heavyweight part of the process. Each sort of snippet of HTML needs to be parsed. These selectors need to run, and then the actions need to be performed. I believe some of this can be effectively cached, but we haven't really looked into that. You might be able to get nice, if you've broken up how your page is constructed into views and then you put them together later, you might be able to do better caching of those specific pieces because they're sort of components that can be put to the side. AJAX requests are a different story because these list of actions is serialized directly to JSON. There's no processing. This can be just spit out directly to the client. And it's up to the client to apply this to the document. So to test the parsing speed, we are using WebKit to parse. We compare this to DOM document, which is a built-in PHP parser. We took 10,000 of the most popular web pages from Alexa, where by web pages, we mean we just downloaded the first page, nothing else. We threw it at the parser. And so on the x-axis, there's the parsing time in milliseconds, and the y-axis is the percentage of sites that were parsed in that time. So this shows, for example, that both parse 80% of the sites in 15 milliseconds. DOM document is a little faster, which we believe is because it ignores JavaScript and CSS, so it doesn't have to parse those, while WebKit has an internal, it parses everything. So the selector overhead is difficult to measure because their selectors can have a variety of different speeds. So to test this, there's a test used for JavaScript that is called SlickSpeed, and we ported this to PHP, which runs 40 selectors of varying complexity against a standard web page. This is, I don't think, an optimal test, but it gives you some idea of the speed. So it's about 1.4 milliseconds to run each selector on this entire 108 kilobyte web page. And our implementation uses query selector all directly. So after the page has been parsed and you've chosen a point at which composition will happen, you need to actually perform an action on the DOM. So we tested 3 actions and we inserted between 0 and a megabyte. We did this at 64 kilobyte increments, and at each size we did it 100 times. So HTML is more expensive to insert. This is presumably because if you think of inserting something into point in the DOM tree, it needs to actually construct the children, where text, it can just create a text node, and the attribute, it can just set an attribute node. But presumably you would not often be inserting a megabyte of HTML into another piece of the document, so this would probably be in the low milliseconds, but all of these things put together do add some overhead. On the client side, the cost is essentially whatever the cost of the underlying library is. Here you can, we create a very thin wrapper on top of the underlying JavaScript framework. So here you can, this is literally how our add class on the client side is implemented. We take a selector and a class name, and we just pass this to jQuery, and it does its job. This is simple. One reason it's simple is because jQuery has an add class function, but there wouldn't be much manipulation that needs to happen because most JavaScript frameworks include things to set classes and or add classes and manipulate that. So this depends on the browser JavaScript speed. So there are a variety of frameworks that allow manipulation of JavaScript on the server side. There's GWT, Cappuccino, Sprout Core. There's RJS, which is a Rails way of doing things. All of these allow you to generate JavaScript on the server, but none of them support non-JavaScript browsers. And they do provide much more interactivity, like SVC would not support drag and drop or things that could not be replicated in non-JavaScript browsers. So, you know, GWT is much more expressive, but they do not try to solve this progressive enhancement issue. And there are more comparisons in the paper to some other templating languages. So, like I mentioned, I've implemented a Python version of this, which I think is interesting because it only requires the LXML library, which is available almost everywhere except App Engine, because it's a native C library. But this means that you wouldn't need to install, you know, this WebKit C extension in order to get your code to run. All you would need is LXML. LXML has a very nice selector, parser, and DOM manipulation. And client-side code could be written using any of these other JavaScript frameworks. What I would like to see is the client-side code could see which framework you're using and either download the appropriate library or maybe, I don't know. But there's no reason we chose jQuery. It just is an arbitrary choice we made. So one problem with explaining this is that it's hard to have a complete example because there are so many different pieces. So at the end of this talk, I have a complete tab example that I'm not going to go through, but this is available on the website if you want to see exactly how it works in practice. So this is at the website. So in conclusion, this provides progressive enhancement of web pages if what you need to do can be done using actions, and if not, this can sort of form the basis of what you need to do, and then you can add custom JavaScript for more interactive things that will not work for non-JavaScript browsers. I'm happy to take any questions. The slides are on the website now if you want to critique a certain slide.
So you use WebKit for headless rendering on the server, right?
Yeah.
Are there interesting issues that come up if you use a different browser on the client, like Firefox?
Yeah, say? There are a few issues. One is that you need the browser to ignore code that it doesn't understand. So, for example, conditional comments are not an issue because WebKit just sees those as comments and it outputs them directly. WebKit does have a problem though with CSS where it ignores the Mozilla specific CSS flags. Because it parses it, if it doesn't recognize it, it throws that away. So that's definitely an issue.
Hi, John Howell, Microsoft Research. So can you said at the beginning of the talk this technique is great for the problems you want to solve that fit inside SVC and not so great for the problems that fit outside SVC. Can you give us an example that gives us some intuition for what kind of behavior you'd want to put in a page that wouldn't fit in the SVC model?
So if you have something like autocomplete, this could make sense with people without JavaScript, but I think it would be unintuitive where you know every time you typed in something, you'd press enter, it'd bring you into a new page, and it would have it sort of a you know, a list of drop-down options. So I think something like this would make sense as sort of added JavaScript. So you could create things that would submit the page appropriately or maybe check for errors. But then on top of that, you would write custom code to do these sort of interactive features. There are a few things that GWT does. Any action you need to perform that depends on the state of the current DOM can't be replicated, because if you don't have JavaScript, you can't grab a piece of the DOM and send it back to the server to evaluate that.
All right, thanks.
I'm just curious, what kind of AJAX application coverage do you think is possible without having to require JavaScript? And it just seems to me that many of the things people want to use AJAX for are highly granular. So in the case of the autocomplete, if I was really updating the autocomplete without JavaScript, I'd have to refresh the entire page, which, by the way, would probably lose my mouse location. So every time I typed a character, then the cursor location would pop back to wherever the default thing is on the page. So I guess the question is it, do you think it's practical to do significant AJAX applications in the absence of JavaScript support in the browser?
Well, in the autocomplete example, you wouldn't be able to hook the mouse, the character. I mean, you would need JavaScript to hook. But I think, like, if you think about Facebook, the majority of things that they do, I think, could be handled using SVC. For example, typing comments, submitting comments, sort of the like button. Anything that you do that can be solved through DOM manipulation of the page, I think, can be handled. I sort of came up with this idea when I was trying to develop a website myself, and just very simple things were very hard to do. Like, for example, even confirmation messages, you know, you want, if someone doesn't have JavaScript, you want to reload the page and maybe have that show up in a flash message. If they have JavaScript, you want to pull that down into the current page, and all of this needed to be duplicated. And I think there is a large percentage of applications that could at least form a baseline of non-JavaScript support. But I would have liked to go through the problem of sort of quantifying that is you'd have to go through, you know, you could go on Facebook and sort of guess about what it's doing, but that sort of forces you to make decisions about where they did AJAX, that would take a lot of time, but it would be something I'd be interested in doing, because it would be nice to say, you know, Facebook could replace 80% of their code with SVC, or it might be 10%, but I think it's in the high percentages.
I was wondering if I could ask a question, a follow-up question to Adam DeBoer on this, which is that based on your experience with Gmail, what would be your advice to somebody who wanted to build a highly AJAXed application? Would you say you must find a way to support non-JavaScript browsers to have widespread use? Or would it be safe in today's world to assume that everybody has JavaScript turned on?
Our experience is that in today's world, roughly 98% of the browsers have JavaScript enabled. So,
I mean, it is interesting to see sort of GWT come out of Google, which has this huge incentive to have people produce pages that code that can be properly indexed, which sort of hampers that.
And so for Gmail today, if you didn't have the non-JavaScript version of Gmail today, would you feel pressure today to add it? Or do you think you probably wouldn't do it today?